We've got the agenda. Let's see. We've got the system here. No apology. Of course, we do have a standing apology, and that is from the Honourables Ariane and Rossini. And Andisa? Siraj, I suggest you get DCI in. Siraj was Right, we've got an apology from Advocate Anton Alberts, yes. But other than that, we don't have apologies. The other day, example, that whiskey consumes a great amount of our foreign exchange, and we don't promote our own wines to the same extent as the Scots promote their whiskies, and we don't promote our brandy. And very recently, our brandy, I think it was the KWV, Miss Naidu, won this international award. But of course, that's not on the TV, is it? Every time you see a whiskey winning an international award, it's slapped all over your screens. And I really think it's time for us to be as manufacturers, as agro producers and the like, we should be more patriotic when it comes to our own products in the country. That sort of thing also provides a lot of jobs. So I only do this because I'm conscious of the fact that our current account deficit is always impacted upon with our exports. So, and of course, by the same token, by excessive imports. And some of you would also realize that the trade deficit has managed to narrow very sharply. Of course, when we pointed this out in the committee, when we came back, when we were in the previous term, round about February, March, we raised this issue and we were told, well, it's a one-way street now, one-way street downhill. It's going to be a further one-way street downhill because of the elections. Well, surprise, surprise, but no surprise to the government or to myself. We, in fact, have managed to cut this continuing decline. And what is, I think, very, very important is that the deficit narrowed more than expected to 190 million in June. Of course, we're talking large figures here from a revised 7.44 billion shortfall in May. Now, that data comes from the South African Revenue Service. And a lot of other things that are reported here, and some of us should read these articles, the exports rose by 3.7% to 80.3 billion, while imports decreased. Now, this is what affects the current account, by 5.1% to 80.5 billion. And I really think that when we hear such good news, let's take it outside and let's become aware that that data brings the cumulative deficit for 2014 to 48.3 billion compared to, this is interesting, 35.6 billion over the same period in 2013. what does that mean? It means we are actually improving economically. So I think that's very good news for the country. And there's a lot more to it. And I suggest you all read your newspapers, media, and various other things that are there. But let us get on then with the program this morning. And I don't have any other apologies, Honourable Hill Lewis. I'm not sure if you were handing one in for Honourable MacPherson.
He did tell me that he's going to be roughly an hour late. I presume he had sent that through.
That's why I just thought I'd just make an inquiry. Right, so everyone is here. We are, well, not everyone who wants to be here. So let's get started. We've got the CCRD again, and we've all got to remember that that's the Consumer and Corporate Regulation. And we've got with us here the DDG, Honourable Zodwa Ntuli, looking very striking in what could only be described as a deep burgundy red. Thank you very much, if you'd like to. You'd like to introduce the rest of your team, and let's get on to these issues in relation to gambling and liquor distribution.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. Chair, I'm just going to briefly introduce the team. I do not see the other team members, but we'll introduce them as they come through and when they do have anything to respond to. But today, I do have Prof. Linda Defries, who is the chairperson of the National Gambling Board, and also have Thabang Mampane, who is the CEO of the National Lotteries Board, and she is accompanied today by Mr. Jeff Dupree. Mr. Jeff Dupree is basically the head of the distribution part of the National Lotteries Board work. Yes. And then we have Mr. Mark Tibela, the Chief Director responsible for Public Entity Oversight in the DG's office. And I'm just going to look if I'm not missing anybody, but I've got everybody right now. And there will be directors that are responsible for gambling, lotteries, and liquor that will join us as we go along, Chair. And I'll just allow the chairperson of the Gambling Board to introduce the manager that she's brought with, because I didn't get the name earlier. Thanks.
Thank you very much, DG Ntuli. Yes, I do see Ms. Defries, is it there? The chairperson. We've got to know your face now. Do go ahead.
Thank you so much, chairperson. I'm accompanied today with our currently the acting CEO. She's our human capacity officer in the National Gambling Board, Ms. Dominica Mzwaini.
Chair, we also just want to extend the apology from Prof. Nebutanda, the chairperson of the National Lotteries Board. He was supposed to be here, but due to other urgent matters, he could not come through. So if we can just extend that apology. Chair, on our side, I think everybody is here. And with your permission, Chair, must I then proceed? Thank you. Chair, today we're dealing with the part of our work that is very complicated, and particularly complicated because it's got a whole lot of effects from a social side of things, but it also has a lot of benefit to the economy. So depending on which side of the fence, you know, you are standing, at times people are completely against these kinds of industries, either from a moral perspective or from a religious perspective. So it is a very complex and very challenging task that we are performing under the space. And at all times we also have to balance our own personal views of things to ensure that as we implement this function, our own personal prejudices do not inform how we regulate the space, because it does require a very objective mind, it does require a very open mind, so that if there are challenges, if there are issues, let us deal with them. But I think you know, to cast a stone and serious doubt on the activities without, you know, being objective about it might also be detrimental, I think, to the industries themselves. So Chair, I'm saying that really by way of introduction, and you will see why as we go through the presentation why we're saying that this is a very complex area of our work. Key to it is the part around ensuring at all times that we balance the issues of trade with the social responsibility part of that kind of trade. As we perform functions here and the operators that operate in this space, it is very important that their operations are very sensitive to the impact of their activities on people on the ground, because we do have challenges with poverty in this country, and so we cannot undermine some of those effects. And at the same time, while we want trade to be happening in the country, we cannot also want to allow trade at all costs. There are things that we need to ensure that we are balancing and we're mitigating all the time. Chair, these are the areas that we're going to deal with. We call them regulated industries. That is the gambling, liquor, and lottery. And I'm happy, Chair, that the laws don't allow me to take part in those activities. So I don't have a personal experience or prejudice towards that area, because the law doesn't allow me to play the lottery, even if maybe I might have more chances and better chances than other people that are playing. But the law doesn't allow me to play, because not even the lottery, Chair. And equally, the CEO is not allowed to play. So I think we are being protected correctly, Chair. I was saying, Chair, the other time that it's probably a good thing that we're not allowed to play. Because can you imagine if we play, and if I play and I lose all the time? I mean, no one is happy about losing. And so when we deal with the policy issues around it, the legislation, it might be completely difficult to separate yourself from the fact that you're not winning. But at the same time, because it's also an issue of also giving confidence in the players that the betting is fair and there's no rigging. So any perception that might be created by perhaps me playing and winning might be very detrimental to just the confidence that the public that is playing can have, because people can actually assume that I probably know the numbers for the lottery when I actually don't know them. But that perception, we try to also make sure that we manage it very properly so that we don't have those kinds of market confidence issues. Chair, on an ongoing basis, what we try and do is to look at the trends, the statistics, you know, around where we are as a country, to see whether we are properly putting appropriate measures to balance the regulation in this particular space. In recent reports from the World Health Organization studies, we do seem to be you know, continuing to be the highest in terms of consumption of alcohol. that is not a very good sign, because there are obviously consequences of that to the economy. From a productivity point of view, in terms of employment, companies and people, you know, pitching up for work and so forth, but also from a health perspective, it is a challenge that we can continue to top the ranks and the ratings when it comes to consuming alcohol. So it is something that we have looked at, and we are particularly concerned about the levels of consumption. But at the same time, Chair, we also look at, you know, what might be the causes, and some of the reasons might not lie necessarily with us from a trade perspective, but it might be reasons that lie with the social development aspect of our country, as well as the health aspect. So through the interministerial committee that was established to look at the issues of alcohol and liquor regulation, there is a focused attention by government in a coordinated effort to look at all of the causes and to also together develop strategies that will ensure that on a continuous basis we are able to deal with this problem. Chair, you'll see that you know, we just come after Namibia in terms of the ratings there, but we are yes, per capita, Chair. That's how they do it, and they look at it in terms of the amount of liters that are being consumed in the country. And certainly some of the statistics, though, might not necessarily be really to the point, because there's also a number of alcohol that is illegal, like illicit trade. So also that part, you know, at times as much as you can have some statistics, but it's very difficult to get, because it's an illegal operation. So you often do not really get the accurate figures around that. But I think the study does give us an indication of how we're doing. But over and above that, Chair, if you look at the world figures, again, we are among the top, you know, around the world, not only on the continent, even around the world we are on top in regards to that. Chair, this is just basically the slide just gives a sense of where things are and where they meet. And as I said, key to that is really the balancing the socio-economic issues around these industries and making sure that these industries are able to still provide the benefit but also reduce the harm to the society. We do have a structure in terms of the both piece of legislation, which is the National Gambling Act, as well as the Liquor Act that is administered by the DTI. There are structures that are created to improve cooperative governance, because these areas, liquor as well as gambling, are subject to concurrent jurisdiction, where the provinces have got the exclusive competence to issue licenses to operators. So this structure allows for that coordination to happen, and also to ensure that you know, on a coordinated basis, we are able to come up with norms and standards that can be applied across, so that there isn't inconsistency in one province and the other province is doing something different. So these structures that they are established in terms of the Act, the intention is very good, but we do need to enhance how they operate effectively, and also maybe give, I think, more powers to these structures to be able to be more effective, just to make sure that the coordination is enhanced. Chair, if we just look quickly on the side of lottery, on the part of lotteries, we came through to this parliament to introduce improvements, and improvements that were raised, you know, because of the challenges that the organization faced in the past. And Chair, I will emphasize the past. And I'm not saying right now it is perfect, but I'm emphasizing the past purely because we became directly involved. We saw where the organization was. we saw where the challenges were, and then when we introduced, therefore, the improvements, the organization is miles away from where it was when those problems were raised. So I think, Chair, I can really attest to that, and you will see our reports, our annual reports are showing those improvements. Yes, there is a continuous need to ensure that our turnaround times improve on an ongoing basis, that we strive to reduce them as much as possible to give service delivery in a much quicker way. But I think we should acknowledge the strides that have been made in this particular area. Chair, you'll recall that when the concerns were raised with this Parliament previously, there were allegations that there's money that is sitting in the organization that is not being distributed to good cause, and there were figures of $6 billion that was being talked about, and that is not a problem anymore. There were challenges around applicants submitting their applications, not knowing what is happening, no acknowledgement, no, you know, you only get a project number and then there's nothing coming. You can call, no one responds to you. That is in the past. The organization has got a working a contact center now, which is assisting beneficiaries and applicants. You can call, they can tell you, as you call, they can tell you where your project is, at what stage, what is it that will be required, if there's anything that is required from you. But that kind of interface with the public has improved significantly, Chair. And also just in terms of interaction with the public, you know, when organizations become too close to the public, like you close yourself, you don't interact with the public, then the public starts creating, you know, images around you because they don't know you. So that has already changed now, in a sense that the organization is much more now going out to the public, is talking to the people. We also allow people to come through to the organization to come and sign the agreements in the organization so that they can see that there's people working there. You know, this is not just a structure that is sitting there and it's faceless people. There are people around the organization, and that has actually assisted also just in building the confidence in the institution itself. So, Chair, we did come through to propose the improvements that we needed to bring through the legislation, and the other improvements were being implemented which did not require the legislation. Those are the ones that I'm talking about around efficiencies, around turnaround times, around systems, around policies, and so forth. All of those things are the things that are being implemented on a continuous basis, and there's improvements on a daily basis around that, Chair. In terms of the new amendment, one thing that is key, which is going to assist a lot, is when applicants apply to the national lotteries for funds, the funds are adjudicated by a committee of independent people that are appointed from the public through a nominations process. So that adjudication process, because it's a part-time function, it does have its challenges, in a sense that the number of applications and the need in the country are bigger than the hours that we can get from part-time activities. So it was agreed, and the legislation has been amended to ensure that that function as a critical function of the organization becomes a full-time function, meaning that when we receive applications, when we've opened a call and we receive applications, then it should be easy for an application that has come today, if it's finalized by the processes of quality assurance and checklist and all of those, if it's done and it's ready for adjudication, it should not wait for a meeting that is going to take place next month or next week or down the line. So it can actually be adjudicated as in when it's finalized and finished, and so that we can actually ensure that people get the speedy results around that area. So that's an important feature, Chair. But the other feature that is also important was the issue of internal dispute resolution. Because you're dealing with applications, there'll be a lot of people that are unhappy about the decision that has been made, and the only recourse that they have is to go to the court. And that does not help. It doesn't help us, it doesn't help the court, it doesn't help the applicant. So what we've done is that we've introduced a system that will then allow for those types of grievances or complaints to be raised within the organization, and then another committee looks at them to see if they cannot be resolved before we can allow the applicant to go to court. We don't want the NGOs to be using the money that they should be using for beneficiaries to fight cases in court. There would be those ones that are unavoidable. There are people that like going to court. We cannot stop them. It is their right. But we would like to encourage people to use the internal mechanism so that we can resolve the issues where we can. It might be that we still do not agree, the next committee does not agree with them, then it's fine, they are free to then approach the court. But we'll try it our best to resolve matters. And we are already doing that, Chair, and we are seeing good results in that space as well, because I think a number of applicants that have had challenges, you know, Chair, a typical example around this space is that, you know, sometimes a person will apply for 15 million and the adjudicating committee looks at the project. Yes, 15 million for a project. That is a small figure, actually, Chair. You'll see as you interact with the organization that the figures are bigger than that, actually. So a person would apply for 15 million for a project on the ground. And so obviously the adjudicating committee will look at the project. They take into account that you're not the only applicant, one. They look at the nature of the project, the impact of the project, and you know, and then they will then determine if it should be funded. And if it should be funded, how much? Because the fact that you ask for 15 million doesn't mean you should get 15 million. But then because it's money that people sometimes look at, it's money from government. When I'm applying for 15 million, I must get 15 million. But Chair, if in fact the attitude is different, when they apply to other funders, you know, like other donors that have always been there, you know, you apply for 15 million, you get 1,000. And it's okay, because they don't have that sense of entitlement. But in this case, because the lotto derives its funds from the ticket, when you purchase that ticket, that is the money, 34% of it currently, that goes to the National Distribution Trust Fund. I'll show you the slide just so that you have a sense of how it works. So people do have a sense of entitlement. So sometimes when they are not granted the 50 million that they are asking for, then they are granted maybe about 5 million for the project, or maybe for a part of that project. Then people will then maybe appeal and say that they are not happy about that. So those, we also deal with them as well. But what we're saying is that as long as people understand that the processes are really based on objective assessment of their project by diverse people sitting around the table looking at that project, and also that there are thousands of other people that have submitted. So if you look at the applications that we receive applications in one call. We can receive applications that are in excess of the money that is available in the NMDTF. So certainly there's no way you can give everybody what they are asking for. And the Act is saying that we must ensure that this money is distributed equitably, which means that we need to ensure that as many projects, as many beneficiaries benefit from it, instead of only just one area and so forth, Chair. Chair, the other thing that was a challenge, which is now being resolved through this the legislation that was passed by this Parliament, is the issue around the accountability of the distributing committee members. Previously, it wasn't clear, you know, how and who they should account to, even when there are concerns maybe about the meetings not taking place, no quorum, and all of those. It was a challenge because it's not very clear who really should be monitoring the day-to-day operations around that space. And the Act is now very clear, because it does provide an operational line to the current board to be able to oversee that part of work, and without leaving it to the minister and the department, who are not necessarily directly involved in that. But for the purpose of independence of these people in terms of their adjudication, in terms of how they look at issues, they will continue to be appointed at that level by the minister, to ensure that they are not necessarily part and parcel of the organization in terms of their independence in adjudicating but they can account to somebody in terms of their work. You know, how many applications you consider per day, that should be something that is managed from a performance management perspective. So somebody must look into that. So the board will be looking into that. Chair, the last part that I thought that I could just maybe highlight from this slide is the intervention in the legislation that allows for proactive funding. Currently, the Act allows only for funding if we have an application. So if there's a serious need in a community, it cannot happen on a proactive basis from the organization because the Act doesn't allow for it. So what we brought in as proposed amendments to the legislation, which have been accepted by this Parliament, was to allow a situation where proactive funding that is based on proper research and based on the need, you know, objectively assessed, can actually be proceeded with, especially for a lot of projects in that arise from, you know, emergencies, you know, disasters that, you know, the disaster fund is not able to cover. There's a lot of disasters, and sometimes the funds from that space are not able to deal with it. Like some schools in various communities which are blown by the storm, and then the kids do not, you know, so the quick intervention in that space is what we are actually wanting to look at, to be in a position to make the direct impact to the lives of the people, instead of introducing significant bureaucratic processes, even where the need is very clear. And so the one concern that was raised, Chair, during the processes of Parliament from the public hearings was we need to constantly ensure that that kind of work is not being abused. Because with any good intention, there would be a room for people to want to abuse it. So we will put in the mechanisms to ensure that the criteria for those projects and how that intervention happens also becomes a very transparent process. So it's not a decision by one person to say, we think that project we need to fund because it's necessary, but it will follow the necessary process of the organization going and looking and compiling a proper report and presenting it to the adjudicating committee so that other people can assess the objectivity of that intervention and then decide whether it's appropriate or not. So Chair, we think that that mechanism is going to be very useful in addressing the concerns that were raised around that. And the other thing that maybe I'll close with on this slide is just the issue around the use of middle people. I'm not going to say middlemen, because in this space we also have a lot of middle women. This is the space where there's a lot of middle women. So the use of these middle people to make applications. Yesterday, Chair, the committee raised issues about runners at CIPIC, you know, those people that are registering companies on behalf of people. It's almost the same challenge in this space, where you find there are people that are purporting to assist the applicants to then access funds from the lotteries. I think that is also a good thing, where an agency is able to assist an organization to prepare the documentation that is required to apply for funds, and so that the organization does not become disadvantaged because the application doesn't address the issues that need to be addressed. But the downside of it is where now the rogue people in that space then would actually be falsifying documentation, creating fictitious organizations that don't exist, and making submissions to the national lotteries to apply for funds. And so in that space, it increases your resources to try and verify the authenticity and the legitimacy of every project and every organization that comes through the door. And so as an organization, would like to be in a position to continue to look at people in their bona fides. But there is a whole lot of unscrupulous people. And I'm sure that the CEO, Chair, when we give an opportunity just to emphasize some matters, will also touch on some of those things that I challenge. So this conduit And by countries, we mean every middle person, whether that person is an agent or is an assisting organization to a smaller organization, but any person that becomes a conduit between the National Lotteries Board and the person that should be benefiting on the ground. That person, we want to monitor how they are allowed to apply. Because the reason why we had to, that happened, where people think they need somebody to apply for them, it was because the processes for applications were said to be very complex. So we have simplified them now. We have also, through these amendments, Chair, removed a whole lot of onerous requirements that were there. So now organizations do not have that, but there may be a need for them maybe, to develop a proposal, they want to be assisted. That is fine, but not that they need somebody to apply on their behalf. But to be assisted, yes, maybe we agree. And also, the organizations that are assisting these small NGOs, the other challenge is that it becomes a continuous dependency, because they become the ones that continue to be applying on their behalf and taking a cut from that money for themselves. But the organization does not grow. At no point the organization is able to do an application on its own. So that also becomes a problem. So we want the organizations to approach the NLB directly so that the NLB is able to assist, and the NLB is able to also introduce a mechanism of assisting them, especially around the financial management of the organization and so forth, because that's where normally the gap is at. Where you're asking for financial statements, financial reports, that's where that information is normally not forthcoming. So if we can enhance that, I think Chair will be able to still be in a position to help a lot of people. Chair, on our side as a DTI, I think there isn't going to be much focus on the lottery space, because I think the interventions that ought to have been done, we have done them, but we will ensure that the implementation of this new amendment is very proper, and it does bring about those objectives that we wanted to achieve. So we will ensure that we monitor that process very closely. We are currently working with the National Lotteries Board to finalize the regulations that should give effect to those provisions. So those regulations will be published soon, and then the legislation will come into force. Chair, the implementation of the full-time adjudication function, that is also a critical element. It must happen, and it must be in a position to happen, I think, sooner than later. So we will ensure that we focus on this directive. Chair, the one area that is common for all of our regulators is the issue of disability. At times, because our space is not necessarily the media space, but the media is a very good tool to communicate your activities and your processes and your successes. So we think that we need to enhance that area for a whole lot of the regulators, because I spoke about the improvements that have taken place in the lottery space, Chair. But a lot of people don't know about them. Some do know, but a lot do not. So people still work on what they think is a problem. And it's just the same as when we spoke about the area in CPIC, that in terms of the Companies Act, we brought about so much simplification just in the registration of a company, that you can actually go to CPIC and you can, if you've got all the documents with you, all the documents required with you, the company can be registered in a day. So we've made that simplification, but people do not know that. And that is why people continue to go to those runners and the agents, because they think it's still complicated to do it. So the communication of that to the people on the ground is also very necessary, but also it's also coupling that with your presence closer to the people as well. Because you can talk about the service, but if people still have to drive from Siyabuswa or wherever to come to Pretoria to do a transaction, again, still that is not going to be good enough. So we must roll out and couple it with you know, getting much more closer to the people in terms of our communication. So we'll focus on working with the agencies to do exactly that. And I'm saying this, Chair, because it runs across most of our agencies, especially where we've got like service delivery type complaints, because we can see that we are making a lot of improvements, but just one unhappy customer is one too many. That is the challenge. And sometimes it's really frustrating because you can see, you know, from the NLP itself, sometimes when there's a complaint in the paper, it becomes so big. But when you actually look at what they have delivered and what, how many applications have been granted, how many projects have been funded, how much monitoring is done, that is so much, but that one becomes too big. So we want to manage that so that even that one, you know, we manage it before it goes to that negative point. Chair, we are also involved in the process from the side of the DTI to just monitor the process for the appointment of the lottery license. As we all are aware, the lottery license is granted for a specified period, and it will be coming to an end next year. And so the process to now appoint the next operator is in progress, Chair. And so as soon as that process is concluded, the minister will be able then to announce the outcome of that process. And so we'll continue to monitor the turnaround times and assist the organization to be able to improve on an ongoing basis. Chair, I'm not going to touch a lot on their achievements. I think that I'll allow the CEO after the presentation just to highlight the major issues. But you'll see from the slides that we really have been, you know, having this lottery for now a long time. It's 15 years, and over that period, the lottery has actually distributed 18 billion to good causes. And this is a lot of money, obviously, that is coming from the people. And it is a big fund. It is the biggest fund in the country. And hence I'm saying, Chair, that's the reason why we receive so many applications, because it's the biggest funder. And because it's the biggest funder, but also it's a state funder, people do feel that they must get something from it to be assisted. And Chair, as at the end of 2013-2014, the NLP has distributed around 2 billion. And this is on average how much we really distribute in a year. And that is an indication of really how much we get in terms of the revenue from the lottery. So it just indicates that as well. Chair, the NLP has got two mandates. The first mandate is to regulate the lottery. And regulating the operator, which is one operator for the lottery, and then the other lotteries. There are other smaller lotteries, you know, society lotteries, you know, the smaller ones. They are also regulated because they need to get also permission and approval from the lotteries to be operated. And Chair, it is in this space where, from a legislative perspective, there are some gaps in a sense that we see other things that are actually lotteries that are coming through as some competitions, SMS competitions and all of that, which are charged at around 2.50 per SMSs and all of that. Nobody actually knows where that money goes to. They will have a car and say you will win a car. How many people are actually sending those SMSs 2.50 for just winning that car, a car which could be costing around maybe 250,000. But the 250 rand SMSs that are going through there is a lot of money. And where is that money going to? That is also an issue that needs to be looked at, because then those are some of the people that some schemes and which are actually just preying on consumers that are hoping to win something. So it is that part of the work that the NLP actually regulates. It's that space. Your winner manje, what is that? FNB one. What was that the case that we took to court, man? Winikaya.
Yes.
The Winikaya competitions. This is essentially a lottery, really, without necessary approval. So that's the work of the National Lotteries Board, which they're going to be focusing even much more on right now. Because when you have that, you have a situation where the revenue is also eroded. The revenue that should be going to the NLDTF is eroded also by these kinds of other lotteries that are going on in the market, but we don't know where and where the money is going. And we don't know who these people account to in terms of how many people played, where is that money going. In fact, did the price actually go to the winner? Those types of things. So it's like lotteries in disguise. So this is a function that they are working on. But the other element, again, and which is a difficulty around regulating this space, is the issue around other lotteries that are allowed in provinces through some legislative gaps. You find that there's some lottery that is operating really, but it is licensed by the province. So those are the things that we are trying to work around. Issues of online type lottery bettings and all of that, there is a need to coordinate there. But I will ask the chairperson of the NGB as well to allude to that when she gives her input, just to show you the difficulty around that space, where in fact we are actually allowing activities that should not be allowed to go to the public and using technicalities in legislation to allow for them to happen. Chair, the distribution function is the function that the public knows more about, because a lot of people apply, and if they don't get the money, then they complain. So people interact with that space much more. But also, it's actually a big part of the resources of the organization in terms of how many people are employed to deal with the space. It is a bigger part, because it actually is a big challenge. And it's work that we actually want to succeed, Chair, because it's work that if we apply it properly, I think a lot of people will really benefit in this country. A lot of good causes in this country will benefit. This is the slide just gives you a sense of who's who in this space. There you have the National Lotteries Board as the regulator. And then there is the operator of the lottery. Currently, the operator is Kidani. And in terms of the arrangement in the license, Kidani pays 34% of the tickets that they sell. They pay that to the NLDTF. The NLDTF is the Lotteries Distribution Trust Fund. So that 34% goes direct into that fund. And then that fund then is the one that will then distribute, the money from that fund are being distributed to the public through good cause projects that are applied for. So you've got then NGOs, community-based organizations, and some organizations, sometimes private organizations, that come and apply, but we don't fund profit-making organizations, but it doesn't stop them from applying. So you do find that people sometimes even convert themselves into a not-for-profit organization just to put an application to the National Lotteries. And I'm saying this because this is a lot of money. Like I said, we get applications of huge money. You know, a person can really put an application for 80 million in the lotteries fund, and those are the things. But when we were here, we did speak also about capping, because when we cap the amount that can be applied for, it will also help us to manage the expectations as well. So it's a lot of money that people see in our books, and they think that because it's big money, then you know, even private entities feel that they should be applying in that space. So those weekly transfers go into the NLDTF. And then the NLDTF, then in terms of who they fund, they are categories. We've got the arts and culture category, then we've got charities, then we've got sports, and then miscellaneous, And then the RDP one has never functioned, that category. It never functioned. So the operational categories that have been getting money, it's the areas that I've mentioned. So you'll see that the charities account for a big chunk of the money that comes from the NMDTF. And also, I think it makes sense because there's a whole lot of charitable activities, especially a number of orphanages, homes for kids, but also schools in areas that just don't even have classrooms. So they fall under this category if they do want to apply for funds. Chair, these are just some of the figures, and just in terms of where the allocation has been in terms of the graphs. And that's how it has been. You'll see that miscellaneous is the smallest in 5%. Miscellaneous is just sort of like the whoever is not falling in arts, sports, and charities. If there is a project that doesn't fall under any of that, but it is important, that application can be considered under the miscellaneous category. And like I say, Chair, it is that category that sometimes we find that there's also people that are applying, and you find these are sort of like business activities, and where we find those, we do reject them, and we do give reasons why we're rejecting them.
Just while you're there, just so that we have this information before we engage, you mentioned what was it, 34% of Kidani went straight to the NLDT for distribution. And it's that 34% that you're getting these various percentages. How much profit do Kidani take, and what are their operational expenditures?
Okay, thanks, Chair. We will then try to address that later on. But like I said, in terms of the current license, it will be 34% that goes into the NLDTF, and then the NLDTF then is then distributed accordingly in terms of those categories. And in terms of the provincial spread, Chair, also that slide is giving us an indication. You'll see that Gauteng continues to be high, not because it is favored, but also because a whole lot of organizations have their head offices in Gauteng. So sometimes the application will indicate that it's a Gauteng application, but you find organizations like the ones that are national organizations, like your the one that deals with animals. It's a national, it's got offices everywhere, but you'll find that an application comes from there. So when we then classify them, we don't break them then down, you know, to the little detail to say also there, also there. So it will also indicate as if Gauteng gets a lot of money, but within these allocations in Gauteng, they are also spread across the other provinces. And there's a whole lot of those big organizations. Like I said, Chair, I will not go into that detail. The CEO would then maybe allude to that also in her emphasis. Chair, we were continuing to have challenges around meeting at least 5% for each province. And we are beginning to make strides in that. The NLP has introduced mechanisms to try and get to those provinces. You know, the provinces that have continued to be a challenge are provinces such as the Northern Cape. You know, we continue to get challenges there. And this is not only unique to the applications in the lotteries, but also in our work in the DTI, in terms of applications for incentives, for any assistance. You find that you don't get applications from particularly the Northern Cape is always the province that doesn't just come through. So what the NLP did was to get into the space of doing outreach projects in those provinces that where we've got a challenge. And the other thing, in addition to the outreach, which is assisting the communities to understand the application processes and what they can apply for and how to organize themselves to be able to benefit from the fund, in addition to that, there are help desks that are set up in those provinces when there is a call to try and assist people much more closer in terms of how they should apply. So those interventions are assisting, but I think we will see some results soon. We are already beginning to see some benefits because now we actually do achieve the 5% in the other provinces, but we need to increase it because it's not the 5% is just the minimum to say we must just make sure that it, at least we do allocate 5% of the money to a province. So, Chair, we are seeing improvement in that space, but also the rollout of provincial offices is also assisting. I mean, there are offices that are already existing now, and there's a plan to roll out in the other provinces because that will also help people to be able to access the national lottery spot from a much more closer proximity. Chair, there are activities that the NLP is currently involved in. I have alluded to the other ones, but I think it is important for us to look at the verification process. Because the verification process is a very critical process, but it's a process that does not make the organization very popular. And that's why sometimes maybe as members of parliament you'll receive maybe information from organizations maybe complaining that their grant has not been paid and it's been months and months. But I think what is happening currently, because of the fraudulent applications that the organization has been receiving, they have introduced a verification mechanism of checking the organization first before they can proceed with an application. So let's say, for instance, an organization comes and applies for 20 million and it's a Zodwa community development project. So what they will do, they will do a verification, at least to check if Zodwa Development Community Project exists, whether it is registered, where is it located, is there indeed a project, you know, those types of things. So when they do that verification, in some cases they find that the organization does not exist, or the documents are not legit, or the address that has been provided as the office space for that organization does not actually even exist, or if it does exist, the organization is not there. It's probably some residential house that is sitting there and they don't know about the organization. So there's a lot of that, but I will allow the CEO to emphasize on this issue because it's a critical process for the organization, because it doesn't help for the organization to be distributing and then we can show that we've distributed all the money that we have in the NLDTF. But when you check where it's distributed, you have actually distributed it to crooks that have taken it and they've run with the money. There are other cases, for instance, where the person gets the money from the National Lotteries and then it goes into that account, which is a charity organization or an NGO. But that money, immediately as it comes in, it moves into a private bank account or a business bank account of the person's company, and so there's those things. So it's important that the National Lotteries introduce systems, and these systems are not very easy, but also they are challenging the organization because they do not necessarily make them popular, but they are necessary. And I think from our side of the DTI, we think that they should continue to actually do this verification. So you'll see that as a result of this verification process, there are projects that in the value of about 250 million that have been withdrawn because the projects just do not seem to exist, or the information that has been given is just not good enough. In one instance, in fact, they found that an organization that has applied for different organizations. Like you apply for four, you're assisting four organizations to apply. And then when they check, the financial statements of these organizations are the same. The only thing that is different is the name of the organization on top. So people are then cleaning the system. So you think you've got financial statements for this company A or organization A, but actually it's just one statement for all of them. So it's those types of these projects that are withdrawn here. And so, like I say, Chair, because it's charitable work, at times we want to believe that charity is honest. You know, everybody wants to believe that. And when the NLB makes those tough decisions, then you know, it's like they're not sensitive to charity. It is not that. It is just to make sure that, yes, we want to assist charitable causes, we want to assist good causes, but it must be real good causes. And we'll continue to support them to deal with these issues. And Chair, just to also enhance that improve that communication and interaction with stakeholders, the NLP did launch the annual Indaba, where all the beneficiaries are invited, even the potential beneficiaries, you know, people that would want to apply in the future, where critical work of the organization is discussed. And in that space, we also, highlight the areas where we want input to the organization's processes from the beneficiaries. And that will be taking place in September this year. And the organizations are invited, and it's largely held in a very big venue, so we get in excess of 2,000 organizations in one space. And that has proven to really assist, because it also improved the communication with the NLP, you know, so that they do not continue to become a faceless organization that just rejects applications. Because if people don't know you, and they don't know, in fact, that you can smile, they think that you were so angry when you were, you were even deciding on their matter. And no, you were just actually looking at it very objectively, just a human being as well. Chair, I'll move quickly just to the areas around liquor from our side, from the DTI side, in terms of the work in that space. Some of the work in the space of liquor is like the space in gambling. I sometimes say it's a thankless job, because when nothing is happening, there's no crisis, people don't know that there's no crisis because you're working. Then when something goes wrong, one thing, then is that thing that then says, no, why is this thing not working? But actually, it's like compliance work, where you're trying to keep everything to work. There's no one that sees that something is working. But when there's something that is not working, then that crisis that you're trying to manage every day, your job is to manage that. But once that crisis happens, then it's as if the work is not happening. So I do like the advert that they used to show from the National Intelligence Department, because they're saying, like, if nothing wrong happens in the country, no one knows that the intelligence is working. But have a serious crisis, then suddenly people say, but why, what have they been doing? Their work is not to deal with crisis, to make sure that the crisis doesn't happen. So when it happens is when they haven't seen it. So I'm just saying that, Chair, this is the kind of work that you see that it happens behind the scenes. With all of these big events, the World Cup, the AFCON, it's where the work of the authorities sometimes comes in. In fact, most of the time, to ensure that everything goes smooth. And when we don't have a crisis, that's when we are happy, because then it means that we are working. So we've dealt with all of the necessary interventions to ensure a successful World Cup. That happens across, because it's also not only from a liquor perspective, but from the intellectual property perspective and all of that. So all of the commitments that we've made in this space, we're able to deliver on them. The regulations that were necessary, we're able to do that. And also, Chair, the inspections have been improved significantly, because that's the other area where the liquor regulations, if you can just issue licenses but you don't inspect, then there is a challenge, because you'll never know what is wrong. So the inspections are a critical element, and we are improving, we are increasing them. Yep.
DDG is to leave the liquor just for a moment and really engage on all of the gambling, NLB and broad gambling activities. I look here, and I see you've got gambling afterwards. Do you see what I mean? And I'd rather finish the gambling before we engage on the liquor, please.
Sorry, Chair. Yeah. We get to the other
gambling.
So I must say, let me just remind honourable members that in terms of gambling, although lottery is also gambling, but in terms of the policy approach, they are dealt with separately, because the kind of regulation that you require for gambling in general, like such as casinos, is completely different from what you require on the side of the lottery. So also in terms of what you are looking to get out of the two, it's also different, so it requires a different policy approach. So in terms of, for instance, the side of the lottery, there's also an obligation to maximize the revenue for the benefit of the good causes. But when you come to gambling, it's a different dimension. You actually want to control more and ensure that it doesn't become an activity that is just focused on making a lot of money, because I think the more the money, probably the more the harm, because you will get money perhaps from more activities and also, you know, bringing in new type of activities, but also getting more people to actually participate for you to get that kind of money. So the types of interventions are different. But in the space of gambling, you will recall that there was a gambling review commission which looked at the entire gambling space to try and look at whether there are any gaps. And that was processed through Parliament. This committee did produce a report in that, which has highlighted the type of interventions that should be done in that space. And there are key things in this review report that we still need to close on. One is the issue around online gambling. The second one is the issue around animal racing, in particular greyhound racing. There may be other people that want to bring other types of animals into racing, so I think the policy that should come in should deal with animal racing in general and maybe propose whether they should be allowed and which ones should be allowed, if they should be allowed. Chair, those are the two elements that we need to be looking into much more closely in closing the policy space around that. The third element that obviously also came out was the issue of aligning the legislation or making the legislation to be flexible to allow for technological developments. And we see that at times legislation does not allow for that. When there's like improvement from technology side of things, but the legislation still requires things to happen in the more traditional way. So we wanting to also look into that. That's an error that came out in the review process. But Chair, while I'm saying that around technology, I think we always emphasize that technology will always develop, technology will always happen, but technology should not be the basis for the law to be made. Technology should support the law, but we must also make sure that the law is not just too rigid, that it doesn't just allow technology. I'm saying that, Chair, because you recall that at some point when there were talks about online lottery, and then a lot of people were concerned that why are we allowing online lottery? You know, why should people not go and buy a ticket at a terminal? Why should they be able to buy it on the laptop? Why should they be able to play on their laptops, on their phone? Aren't we overstimulating, gambling? So those are types of things that are considerations that should be made, but decisions must be made in terms of to what extent you allow that, and so that there's also certainty in the market, because as the industry players innovate, they also need to know to what extent the innovation will be allowed, so that they don't invest in innovation And then once they've invested, then we are saying, no, but the law doesn't want that. So they should be in a position to know to what extent they can do that. Chair, we also did look at the regulations for exclusions for those people that need to be excluded from entering into gambling outlets. So we looked at that, and we also did look at enhancing the limitations around advertising in the gambling space. I think the advertising in the gambling space is currently properly controlled in a way. I think, and the industry is complying really to the advertising limitations that have been put to them. Chair, the other thing that happened in this space is the process of discussing norms and standards with the provinces to try and achieve that coordination and consistency that we spoke about even yesterday, to say in some of the areas, if another part is not working, it doesn't help that the GTI part is working. So we need to work together to make sure that the system works in a consistent way. Chair, I will allow the chairperson also to add and emphasize some of these issues. But in terms of the figures that we are getting around the gambling space, you can see that a study that was done by PwC, which compared the gambling industry to, for instance, Kenya and Nigeria over a period 2013 to 2017 in terms of the outlook. You can see that South Africa has got the overall largest gambling market, and it's got also the largest land-based casino gambling market. So those are the things that do not mean that we should therefore maybe change something or revise something, but it just helps to keep us abreast with what is happening from a development point of view around the gambling space. And at some point, I remember, Chair, that when the whole world was going through a recession, the concern that was there was that, in fact, in the gambling space, it was growing. And then the question was, how can the whole world be in recession, but there's no recession in gambling? So those are some of the things that are just giving us indications in terms of the necessary interventions that might be required. And also, just according to the NGP research, the total value added impact of the gambling sector was about 21 billion in 2012, which is about 0.8% to the GDP. Chair, like I said earlier on, this is an industry that does contribute to the economy, but we do need to ensure that equally it does assist in dealing with the effects that might be negative that flow from there. The norms and standards have been finalized, and I think the final round and the submission to the Policy Council will take place, where once we agree on the norms and standards, then it's easy to then integrate the norms and standards into the legislation, and therefore all of the provinces then will have to align their legislation to that legislation which has got the norms and standards. And that is the function of the national office, to ensure that there are norms and standards to improve coordination in that space. Chair, we also will be coming through with the policy, which will be published for comments, to then deal and address those issues that I've alluded to, which were raised in the gambling review. And in fact, in that gambling review, Chair, there were statistics that also were helpful to determine how we approach some of the policy changes and legislative changes that would be necessary. For instance, I mean, in terms of the levels around problem gambling, if you can see that you've got a high number of problem gamblers, then it means, therefore, maybe you must revise how you regulate that space from the operator's side, so that you can be able to minimize that. So it does help us. So we saw that, we continued to be at least I think one of the highest, if you compare with the countries that were compared in terms of problem gambling, but we're not out of the norm, but we should not necessarily be happy that we're not out of the norm. So we'll put in the proposals in the policy. We've engaged with the regulator as well on those issues, and then we'll finalize and continue to engage with the regulators as the people that implement the legislation, because we also need to get their views before we finalize on these issues. Chair, we will continue to then improve on the partnerships and work with the NGP to ensure that we improve the relations around that space. Just in terms of their activities, the activities that are authorized in the gambling space is casinos, horse racing, that's the betting part of it, bingos, and that speaks to the traditional bingos, and limited payout machines. Those are the ones that you see much more closer in the communities, and then we have interactive gambling. And then you've got the regulation of bookmakers, those that are betting on horses and other activities. So, Chair, there are areas which I've touched on that still require attention. The issue around the electronic bingos, that's where I spoke about technology. The electronic bingos, whether we should be allowing them, that's an issue that needs to be closed now in the policy. The greyhound racing is an issue that has come up. It came up through in this parliament, in the public hearings as well as online gambling. So I've touched on that. The one area which continues to be a challenge is the area of FAFI. So the FAFI runners continue to be there. I haven't seen them in a long time, but I think they are there in the communities. So there are communities where they are prevalent. But the FAFI is a concern because I think it is gambling, and it can be addictive, and similarly there are challenges around it. So currently it's not an area that is regulated, but at the same time I think even the Gambling Review Commission said that there needs to be further work in this space. So I suppose we'll have to come to a conclusion, though, because we've been saying there should be further work in this space, but I think the timing issue is a problem. Chair, those are the figures that are showing you in terms of just the spread of the revenue that is generated, taxes and levies. You will see that obviously, there's 76% there. You can see comes obviously from the casinos. And then you've got your bingos there in 2%, which is really the smallest figure of the pie chart. In terms of the provinces, you can see, in terms of the taxes and levies collected, there are provinces that are obviously big in this, and then there are others that are just there in the space, but they are also contributing. You'll see that KZN there is featuring, the Gauteng is featuring there, and as well as the other provinces in terms of the pie chart there. So, but the contribution is clearly just showing you an indication of how much is collected in terms of revenue. How much contribution really comes to the public, but the critical part is what interventions are there to deal with the harm that comes with it. There is a national gambling responsible gambling program that all the operators, except for the lottery, and I have said this before, Chair, that I do think that it is not necessary for the lottery to be contributing to this fund, because the lottery is already, in terms of the structure, the contribution goes through the NLDTF. So here it's a different kind of gambling operators that should be contributing to this fund. So this fund will assist in basically looking at the harm that comes with gambling, assist in terms of public awareness, training. They also assist in terms of counseling. There is a toll-free number for counseling purposes. It assists people that have got gambling problems, and they do produce statistics on an ongoing basis around that, so that they can then devise interventions that will assist with minimizing the harm. They're also integrating the education on gambling and the harms of gambling through the school curriculum that they've developed, which is available to be integrated at any time. And they are working much more closely with the NGP also in regards to these activities to assist in dealing with the harm. Chair, these are the figures that have been provided in terms of problem gambling calls. I think these are figures that are very useful to monitor whether we are dealing adequately with the issue of problem gambling. It is a problem when we don't have figures, then we don't know how many people are actually affected. But just on a practical basis, if you go to a casino any time of the week, actually, even on weekends or during the week, you go there, you see the kinds of people that are looking very distressed, that have just lost, and then they're just sitting there, they don't even have money to be going home. And also, you also have these ones that are coming through in buses. They organize themselves from communities, they come and gamble, they're being brought in, and then you can see the distress in the faces of these people. But then you also can see the ones that are happy, that have come to gamble because they are wanting to, they take these things entertainment. So it is those ones that are distressed that we should be concerned about, because those are the ones that need assistance. And like I said earlier, you know, everyone can be happy and receiving a service, but the one that is not necessarily the happy one is the one that we need to focus attention on. So that is why the National Gambling, the Responsible Gambling Program is assisting in terms of all of this. So those are the statistics in terms of the referrals as well as the telephone counseling that they've been conducting. Chair, there are also a few cases of note that the NGP wanted to highlight. The first one obviously deals with the issues around the electronic bingos. You'll recall that the Act allows for bingo to be regulated. However, what was being introduced was what they call electronic bingo machines, and then this went to court, and the court decided that the electronic bingo terminals, they do take the form of a slot machine, and therefore, in the current form, they probably should be activities that are played in a casino instead of being played in the bingo halls. And the other issue that was also looked at was the issue around online gambling, where a decision was made that online gambling is actually illegal in South Africa, and that everyone that operates an online gambling activity in South Africa is operating an illegal operation, basically. It's an illegal business. So this is just the cases just for information, but these cases are also just giving us a sense of that we need to just close on those issues from a policy perspective and give direction to the industry around them. So I think that ends the slide around the NGP. Like I said, Chair, there are challenges that run across the entities. I've talked about the issue around visibility, so we'll be working with the agencies just to also ensure that we are doing well in that space. But there are also challenges also about the NGP in terms of its mandate being a concurrent mandate with the provinces. That continues to be a challenge, especially where there isn't maybe agreement. You know, where there's agreement, there's no issues, but where maybe you've got different views in terms of the approach, then becomes a challenge. And so it's an area that requires just, you know, some attention for them and that's why we said we'll work with them to ensure that we just improve those partnerships so that we can then work in the interest of the industry and the economy. Chair, I don't know if you want me then to finalise the liquor or
DDGs. I think that's given us a very broad overview about the salient issues here. And I think for new members, especially in this particular committee, it's been extremely helpful. It's also refreshed our minds, those of us who have been here before, about the issues that we dealt with recently over the years, and of course some of the outstanding issues that remain outstanding. I always remember that 2009, the very first meeting I had after being elected as chair was gambling, and you may recall you gave that presentation. It was the very first meeting, and we spoke then about online. So it's, in one way, although there have been great progress made in areas like the National Lotteries Board and also in gambling, broadly speaking, we do have, how can I put it there, it is a challenge that we haven't yet resolved some of these issues, and I think you would agree with that, even though there has been great progress. Right. So what we will do at this point, just to facilitate everything and to ensure that the business of the meeting flows quite smoothly, we're going to take the questions now, the first bank for the gambling, and the NLB. And we will then come back after tea for the response, unless anyone has a challenge, because we hope to finish in particular the gambling itself in terms of the questions by 10:30. DDG, you just had your hand up then.
Chair, I just wanted to find out if you will still be allowing at least the chairperson and the CEO just to add something just before take, yes, on gambling and lottery, yes, thanks.
As I said, we want to just complete this particular section. Thank you. Chairperson De Vries.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the comprehensive review of the DDG on gambling is quite substantive. I think I want to just share some of the successes that we did have within the National Gambling Board. As members would know, we are the supervisory body, and because the area of gambling is one of the areas in terms of FIC that is open for fraudulent activities internationally, and that's a clear area where we are taking the lead and both work with all of the province so that gambling per se is properly regulated in terms of our Financial Intelligence Act. The area of illegal gambling is a very important area, and over the past period, this is the one area that the National Gambling Board has assisted provinces and has worked with all of the various government agencies to come as a collective together so that we can address it. The statistics around illegal gambling is as shattering, and if you think that one machine is about 155,000 rand per month, and if you have about 1,600 machines that's illegal and been seized, and we have the statistics around how many raids we have, but I think the scary statistic is that we, I think, have one conviction and a few fines, and that doesn't make sense in the line of what is illegal across the provinces and in the country. So that's clearly an area where I think in terms of the new administration and the way we work with all of the various other government departments is critical. You know, the South African police, the Reserve Bank, and all the other agencies together. I think the matter of research has been highlighted. It's clearly one of the areas of strength of the National Gambling Board, in the fact that all the other provinces' research just focus on what they do in the provinces. And as I speak, you know, there's a number of the specific research projects that we've done in provinces has come, and because then they see things in perspective. One of the pieces of research, particularly on the gap in the regulatory framework on bingo and electronic bingo per se, was to look at what can the country bear in terms of the size and the shape of a bingo industry if we should legislate it. Now remember, there was a moratorium on bingo's rollout, which all of the various provinces agreed with, but as I speak, I think because there's not a properly regulatory framework, we have, in Eastern Cape, I just have the results, have six bingo halls being licensed, and in their report, they said there's about 11.3% increase in the income, and let me get the right statistic, but particularly in the Eastern Cape because of the six bingo halls, which in terms of the framework and the mandate is not legal, but it has contributed to the increase of their turnover in the Eastern Cape. In the Northwest, on the 8th of August, they're launching a bingo hall. In Mpumalanga, they've launched a bingo hall. And the reality about that is because there's no regulatory framework, and because nationally our legislation don't give us the teeth to not only monitor compliance, but also be able to say that that's illegal, it is one of the challenges that we have. But what we've done is we've provided the framework on bingo to all of the provinces as well as to the ministry. Another area of research, I think for the first time we've done substantive quantitative research, but we also have done a qualitative study completed in 2013. Now the first time the qualitative study nationally has provided us with a deep sense of what is actually happening within communities. And so these numbers are not only numbers, but they are faces, and they represent real communities. And particularly the indications for policy will come out of that, and we're very pleased that that, I think, has made a huge contribution in our understanding of gambling in the country. Then I think one of the key things for us is the fact that we have, with the limited payout machines, have, in terms of the Act, mandated to have a central monitoring system. That national monitoring system will, the current provider will, the term will come to an end by June 2015, and we have started to begin the process around what's the lessons we have learned, and the central monitoring system is a critical tool that allows us countrywide to monitor as well as evaluate the performance of both our provinces, but also the limited payout machines, because they are within communities as we speak. An area in the limited payout machine issue is the fact that the Act indicates that the National Gambling Board must provide approval for anything more than over five machines. Now clearly, because of the concurrent jurisdiction, that's an area of conflict, and I think that's an area that needs to be addressed around it, because some of the provinces roll out more than five machines, up to 40 machine sites, without that approval, and that's a critical area to be addressed. I think our role within both South Africa, but I think the statistic, if we look at in terms of Kenya, but on the continent as a leadership role in terms of the gaming regulators of Africa, and we have assisted countries like Botswana and Tanzania and Kenya, and we're working with Namibia around their own legislative framework for them, because you see what happens in one of our border neighboring countries impact South Africa, and so we at this specific forum and in our role, we assist many of these countries to ensure that their legislation speaks to the legislation will benefit the continent, but also that we don't have flight of money out of the continent but outside of our borders. So that's clearly a very important role that we need to continue playing and have played thus far. I think the area of public awareness, and I think the DDG has reflected on, clearly it's not good enough just to have an 08600 number on responsible gambling. It is important that our messages get out into real communities. And one of the things we've done successfully, but not done enough, because you know it's linked to budgetary constraints, is when we have partnered with our national media platforms in the country, that reaches every language in the vernacular across the country, and that really got the message out around responsibility and what gambling is about, and address people. Now clearly that's something that needs to be continued as we go forward. And I think my time is up. I think the DBG has just highlighted the issue of the sports betting and the fact that that infringes on the legislation of the lotto, and particularly because it's licensed within the Western Cape. Even the impact of that is that it takes income from other provinces, because now that can be done across the country, and therefore it don't only receives money from the Western Cape punters, but it also has an impact on other provinces around it. So that's clearly an area that needs to be addressed. I think we've highlighted, and in our work on illegal gambling, interactive gambling, I mean, I just saw one of the statistics is there's about 2,000 operators who take South African money. They don't operate from South Africa, but they access South African public, and the money therefore flow out of the country towards other jurisdictions across the world. Just as we speak, there's about 50 of them whose platforms are in South Africa, and this is an area that the partnership with our communications ministry is critical, the Reserve Bank, so that we can address that area properly, but also obviously the need for proper regulation in this area is critical. I think the last thing I just want to say is there's a need, and the chair of the portfolio committee will know, to particularly address horse racing and the national framework of horse racing, because the horse racing authority is self-regulated. They are both the referee and the player, and the only part of is the betting side, the income generating side of horse racing, that is regulated by the various provinces. Now that clearly is an area that's not satisfactory, because it's an area that their income and their subsistence is dependent on the betting side of it. So it's an area that we must have a proper regulatory framework in place, and that there's accountability within to the national structures of the country and our legislation about horse racing. I think I wanted to just highlight, I think, some of our successes, some of our challenges, but I think in the questioning we would have more of those things. Thank you so much.
Okay, Chair, if we can allow the CEO of the NLB. Yes.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members, and thank you, DDG, and our board member. I think your presentation covered most of the important issues. The only thing I just wanted to indicate is that what was left out was our vision that we are a catalyst for social upliftment. And in terms of the challenges, because I think your presentation was quite comprehensive. In terms of the challenges, you alluded to the issue of the applications that we received. From the calls that we've had in 2012-2013, we realized that demand definitely exceeds the available resources. The 34% that DDG referred to earlier on that we received from Kidani translates into anything between 1.6 to 2 billion rand. So that's what is supposed to be distributed every year, and given the four sectors that would have been
billion
indicated
billion?
There.
Billion.
Billion. Yes. Thank you, Chair. And that given the percentages that were indicated on the presentation for charities, sports, and arts and culture, the demand is quite high. So from time to time, we try really to also inform the applicants that the reason we're experiencing challenges with the turnaround times, it's mainly due to the number of applications that we receive that we have to process within a particular time. Having said that, we still experience a very high rate of decline. One of the things that the legislation that has been amended is trying to address is actually how we can assist people in those areas, especially priority areas, who are battling to submit compliant applications, and hence there will be a drive from the NLB not to concentrate on the help desks only, but to embark on quite an aggressive education process to try and educate our people. And that will be linked with the offices that we are opening in the different provinces to ensure that there's access to our funds. The NLB is focusing in this financial year on a few other important issues which came about as a result of the legislation or the amended legislation. One of the things that we have developed in the organization is an impact study which gives a kind of strategy for funding, but it's linked with the amended legislation, and it addresses those issues around proactive funding and how it should happen. It addresses issues like whether you treat a first-time applicant as an all-time applicant, but also looking at the quantums, the amount of money that's been applied for, that in terms of how that should be adjudicated on, you know, how it should be done in the organization. It's mainly meant to make sure that we expedite the process of distributing the funds. The other issue is that given the fact that the organization has existed for 15 years, there is definitely a need for us to modernize. The systems that have been built 10 years ago are no longer responding to the current demands that we have, and we're working on that, ensuring that with the new appointment of the CIO that we recently implemented, that we're going to be delivering on modernizing our technology and making sure that we deal with other organizations that are already operating in those priority areas or rural areas, like the post office. They are using the very technology, and we're looking at how we can work together to reach all South Africans who need assistance from our organization. And not that only, in terms of our people internally, that as a new organization and the only one in the country, we don't talk of professional grant funders, so we're trying to professionalize that area so that even when people have to leave the organization, they can go and market their skills somewhere where they are regarded as professional grant makers or professional whatever in grant funding. Chair and honorable members, Ms. Ntuli alluded also to the issue of the 5% spread in provinces and the difficulty the National Lotteries Board would have experienced to reach this target. It's something that through a lot of, I must say, pressure from the board, we ended up achieving in the previous financial year, and we will be focusing now on ensuring that the 50% allocation to rural areas, you know, receive attention in this financial year. On the side of the regulatory and compliance, I think we also are sharing the challenges that the NGB has in terms of illegal lotteries and how that is diluting the 34% that we are supposed to be receiving from the operator. We have a classic example. Now I'm not at liberty to set that example because it's about companies that are operating where information, the numbers that are actually used by Powerball are being used by another intelligent organization, you know, to determine what the Powerball numbers will be, and necessarily the Powerball revenue is necessarily affected by that activity. But we're dealing with this matter with the NGB. We have a relationship where we are talking about this, where the legislation is creating that challenge for the NLB. And also the last one, on the issue of illegal lotteries, we will be approaching the shareholder, the DTI, to talk about enforcement laws or regulations or powers for the National Lottery Board. Much as we have a compliance unit, we are finding it very difficult to deal with illegal operators because necessarily we don't have enforcement powers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. That is the CEO, Ms. Mampani, and thank you also to Professor Linda De Vries, Chairperson of ANGB, and of course the DDG of the CCRD. Now, we're going to let that gel in our minds, keep it there, so that we do come back after tea with our questions. But before we go to tea, I'd like members to pass the minutes of the 11th of June, July rather. That's Friday, the 11th of July, where we had a very, it would appear, quite a full meeting. Now, at that point, we only had two apologies. Everyone was in attendance. Page one, please check your names. Page two, we'll see the names of the DTI in attendance in the various divisions, and also the trade, investment and exports. And the information thereof. Page three. The need to ensure that there's more outreach. The formal consideration of the vote, I will speak to that in a minute. We have a response from the table in that regard. I'm referring, of course, to point four. Point five. Point six. In this instance, all you've been asked to do is to ensure that this is a true reflection of what happened, not whether you agree with it or not. We have someone to propose the adoption of those minutes of the 11th of July. Honourable Hill Lewis, seconded by the Honourable Tali. Now, I have a response here. Issues were raised around that. I think we were in Mark's building on the fifth floor. And it came, in fact, as you will recall, there were even concerns raised by the chair in terms of the difference of the process that we would now proceed on. There were also queries raised by different parties in this regard as well. Now, I'm not going to go right through the background of the committee conducting its business on behalf of Parliament. We are all aware of that, and that we were considering this vote, and past practices dictate our committee. We are all aware of those issues there, custom and practice. And it then comes to the point of 2.4, which is given to us here, by the procedural table, the table itself. Past practices dictate that the committee report reflects the recommendations, which would include the request that the House approves the department's budget for the House to consider the report. Any decision in not in favour of adopting the report was captured in committee minutes and is not part of the report. 2.6, parties would still retain the right to express their views on the report in the debate. So what they are saying is that the difference of opinion would be captured in the minutes, not in the report. Recent budget vote reports published in the ATC, I think your point, Honourable Hill Lewis, deviates from this practice, and that some reports request the House to pass the budget vote of the respective department and include then those the points made by parties who object, and also include in some reports are the respective parties' position, as I've just said, on the budget vote report, which in the past has been captured in the minutes. The NA rules only make provisions for minority views to be expressed on legislation. Of course, we seem to forget the budget is legislation. So these are the issues that the table is grappling with. The committee section has taken note of these deviations and has established a procedural task team to consider developing a common position on how recommendations in committee reports on budget votes and reports other than legislation are drafted. As we know, in our rules, and in fact the Constitution, money bills are treated separate or differently to others. So they are, you know, from time to time, these issues crop up when they've never cropped up before. And I remember in the previous term, nobody had ever used the rule which allowed them to, which enabled them to express a minority opinion once a report was being adopted. And the Honourable Oriani Ambrosini insisted on doing this, and I said, on what basis? And he actually quoted the rule which allowed that. And it was the very first time the rule had ever been used. So sometimes when things aren't used, we forget they even exist. I think this should be made clear. But this is undergoing a proper process per se, just for the record, as we come to the end of this first quarter. So on that basis, I do hope that that addresses that issue at the moment, and we'll come back to it in the new quarter. The other issue is with respect to the program, which we've now processed and fine-tuned. I have asked for it to be handed out, and I would hope that all members have a copy. We are at this stage, I'm sure you're aware, also pulling in the belts here in Parliament, and there used to be colour printers attached to every committee. These days I believe there's one heavily guarded colour printer in the committee section, so very few things are put into colour. I have the one in colour, the rest of you have what I have in red in bold. I hope that's clear. Three changes have been made, two with respect to the programming committee of Parliament. So we're now starting on the 19th of August. And we've got a briefing on the impact of policy change conditions attached to International Monetary Fund and the World Bank loans, etc. That's especially in regard to not so much that we have all these loans with IMF and World Bank, but we also have trading partners in our region and on the continent who do have such arrangements. Then again, on the 22nd, we've got public procurement and localization. That's a swap around, of course. And then something called, I don't know if Ms. Hurling is here following what I'm saying, a colloquium on beneficiation, value addition, upstream and downstream, which will pick up on the issues in which were raised during the colloquium on industry, admin prices and the constraints in that regard, you remember, with energy and the like, and it'll come through to beneficiation as well. So we will get issues such as parity pricing and the like, the impact here in this regard, and what are the challenges, or what can be done? What is it? What is beneficiation and value addition about? And then, of course, during the process, we'll also have the other issues. The program itself will be fully spelled out to members at the end of next week, probably Thursday. We would like you to ensure that all your emails are contactable, so this does come through. Then on Tuesday, the 2nd of September, the detailed briefing on trade policy, as well as an update on all the existing trade agreements, briefing on the implementation of export incentives and the National Exporters Development Program. And towards the end, I know Honourable Hill Lewis, at some point you're away during this period, briefing on the WTO, the status of the Doha Round, and the Doha Developmental Agenda. As well as, some of you may not know, this committee deals with space, astronautical issues, and weapons of so-called mass destruction, as well as the work of the Committee on the Non-Proliferation of Weapons in that regard. So these are issues we may tackle probably twice during a course of 5 years. We are obliged to be aware about them in case, of course, there are issues that arise in that regard. And on the 12th of September, which is a very important day for all committee members, and I've even asked the committee secretary to consider extending this meeting if necessary, so that we don't get requests for early flights. The DTI will be briefing us on its first quarter's financial and non-financial performance. And that is going to be very, very important for all of us to be here. So that is your program. It is unlikely to be changed. Unless we have a joint sitting on one of our days, unexpectedly. So I do hope you will try to earmark the Fridays concerned. Where it says we are meeting until 2 on a Friday, I have already pointed out at our very first or third meeting that that can change a week before to 4 o'clock. Depending on the issues themselves that arise. So on that note, I'd like the committee members, someone to propose adoption of this program, which will now finally go to the Honourable Froelich, the Chair of Chairs. Honourable MacPherson, seconded by Honourable Luyenge. Thank you very much. There is some hot tea outside, so let's try and get that over with in 10 minutes, and then we'll come back to the question on gas. Right, it's 20.